Hey strangers, hope everyone is having a sunny Tuesday or at least a semi-warm one if you're not on the West Coast. I've been a little MIA this past month because I was traveling and writing and doing all of the things, but myself and the Livin' for Food Pod is back with some really amazing guests today and lined up the next few months, so stay tuned. Back from my short hiatus, I have Carrie Mori, the founder of Callie's Hot Little Biscuit out of Charleston, South Carolina. We talked about her PBS show, how she rolls, how she navigated the female entrepreneur world, and all things, well, hot biscuits. So please join me in welcoming the wonderful Carrie Mori.
One, two.
So it's really, really great to meet you. I've had some really amazing female entrepreneurs on lately. So you're really completing the triangle circle. I don't even know how many I've had so far, but you're definitely completing it, and I'm excited to speak with you.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm honored, and sounds like I'm in good company. So we love the female entrepreneurs.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I got some good ones for sure. But I would love to start by you telling me a little bit of your background. You created your food company in 2005. What were you doing before then? What was your path looking like?
Before I created Callie's, I lived in New York City. I'm from Charleston, but I lived in New York City and I was working for an internet company. I headed up their sales team at the young age of 27, which was completely insane, but a lot of fun and learned a lot. And it went out of business, as most dot coms did. But I think that gave me the impetus to come up with the concept of selling Callie's biscuits mail order. So Callie is my mom, and she always made these great country ham biscuits. And I really wanted to figure out a way to combine my lifestyle, what I wanted my lifestyle to be, which was to really be a super present stay-at-home mom. But I knew that I needed a side hustle, and I knew that if I was really going to love it, it needed to be in the food world. And I knew I didn't want to own a restaurant because the hours and the lifestyle just, it wasn't what I was looking for. So I came up with the idea to start a mail order country ham biscuit business, which is crazy in 2005 when no one was shipping food online. And certainly most of the country doesn't even know what country ham is. So the fact that we're still in business is pretty amazing because it wasn't a particularly good business plan to start.
Yeah, that is incredible. I wonder too if, when the company went out of business, did you feel this calling to be an entrepreneur? A lot of the women that I've talked to were like, I have this idea, but I just felt like it was something I was meant to do. So is that something you experienced?
I didn't know that I wanted to be an entrepreneur, and I come from a family full of entrepreneurs, but I never had that desire until I got into it. And then it was like, where have I been? What have I been doing? Like, this is my calling and this is what I love to do, and I can't imagine working for anyone ever again. But I did not have those signs. I knew that I wanted to work in food, and I knew that I wanted to be a present mom, but I didn't know that I was going to be an entrepreneur.
Yeah, that's so funny. The American South too is really well known to celebrate hearty foods. They, revolve a lot of things around food as well. Was your family very involved in cooking or
Oh
baking?
my gosh. I mean, you're right. You nailed it. In the South, we sit at breakfast and talk about what we're going to have for lunch. And at lunch, we talk about what we're going to have for supper. And everything is an occasion. And we're always trying to find a reason to celebrate and inviting people over for supper. And it is very much our culture to share food and drink with anyone and everyone that will let us feed them. So I grew up in that environment and didn't have any culinary formal training. I just knew that I loved feeding people, and specifically with Southern food, and felt that, biscuits were so nostalgic and such a part of so many lives, not just Southerners. Everybody seems to have a connection with biscuits, even if you're from the West Coast. And I grew up with my grandmother making them every day. Like for every meal, they are a quick bread. They come right out of the oven. They're hot. They're served on the table after everybody sat down. And I felt like nobody was doing that anymore, and there wasn't a good biscuit. And so I said, well, let's do it. We got to revive the art of biscuit making because it's kind of like our Southern heritage.
Oh, yeah, totally. I feel like any sort of heritage, especially in the U.S., there's some bread that's involved in everything, whether it's like anything from cornbread or like a crescent canned roll, which is what I loved eating growing up too. It's like bread is so versatile and it's so delicious. And especially when it just like comes out of the oven and it's all warm and, you know, you can eat it with your family, whether you're making it homemade or from the grocery store can. But I totally agree. Like that is a staple food for so many homes.
It is. And I mean, bread is sustenance and it's comfort and it just completes the meal. And I can't really imagine not having bread at our supper table. And, you know, I feel as if biscuits have become something that people think of as breakfast, but honestly, I had them more for supper than I did ever for breakfast. And I think the fast food.
Me too.
You did? Oh, okay. I love hearing that because most people say, oh, breakfast, biscuits, I think of like a bacon, egg, and cheese. And we rarely had that. It was always, we had bacon, we had eggs, we had grits, and we had a side of biscuits. But mainly it was for supper.
Oh, yeah. No, that's how I grew up too. I feel like there was always like a side of bread or biscuits at dinner time. So, I mean, I guess because I'm from the East Coast, it was bagels that would be in the morning. So I guess it makes sense that we wouldn't have a biscuit with our bagels. Yeah. But, you know, you mentioned your mom had this recipe, but I also read in an interview, I think it was with PBS, that one of your biggest mentors was actually your father, because he was also an entrepreneur himself. In what ways did he inspire you in your personal journey?
Oh, he has inspired me and continues to inspire me. First of all, my parents were divorced when I was really young. And I actually lived with my father. He raised me for the most part. I mean, I spent 90% of my time with him. And so in the South, growing up with, you know, my father, you know, being a single dad, it was a very different rearing. And he just did everything that he could to make it happen for me. And he was an entrepreneur and he struggled. And he's my idol, you know? I mean, he makes it happen for not just me, but for my brother too. And he's always made it happen for us. And not by giving us things, but showing us the way and understanding the importance of working hard and doing things for yourself and being super self-sufficient and just really seem to be able to have this balance of being a great father, working hard, being really successful, being very well respected. And he was a connector and is a connector of people. And so, you know, he just always inspired me to, wow, I've got really big shoes to fill, and a great philanthropist too. I mean, he's just kind of done it all.
Yeah. When you can have that role model like that, especially self-starters, I feel like it can definitely motivate you, whether it's subconscious or not. Cause I know you said, you know, it wasn't necessarily in your wheelhouse at the time, but I feel like subconsciously it just gives you that sense of motivation and that sense of encouragement that if you were to take that risk and start a new business, even if it quote fails, you know, at least.
And I think it's so interesting that you say subconscious, because it was totally subconscious. I always adored him and thought he was great, but I didn't put two and two together. And you know, the other thing that is very much my favorite characteristic of my father is that he's beyond positive. Like, you know, no matter how bad your day is, like he always finds a way to be like, okay, well, if that's the worst thing that happens, you're good, you know? And raising children, that is super important. And raising a business too, you need to always be positive because there's so many hard days, hard times, problems to solve. And if you can be positive no matter what, it makes it so great for yourself, but also for your team, you know?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I'm sure being too, like you said, that single dad in, you know, a Southern community, I would like to think that maybe has evolved at this point now, but that's like another layer.
In the 70s? No. People are like, oh Lord, you know, I'm sure they're probably like,
I know.
Bless I'm his like, heart. Bless his heart. How's he doing that? You know, that kind of thing. So.
Oh yeah. I know. I heard bless his heart. Bless your heart is a actual dig.
Yeah. It can go both ways. It can go both ways for sure.
Okay. I know because I always give like women compliments because I'm just the kind of person that I feel like if I think a compliment, I need to see it or I need to say it. I mean, and I feel like women just have a way of saying things that could be like passive aggressive, like, oh, I like this. And I feel like bless your heart is kind of the same
deal. It is a little bit. It definitely is the quintessential Southern little dig.
It's so funny. Hey, everyone That's has right. one, right? In that same interview I was mentioning, you mentioned Natalie Dupree, who has like 14 cookbooks now. She was the first, for listeners, woman since Julia Child to host more than 100 cooking episodes on public television, which is crazy. How was she able to aid you in the business? How did you guys connect?
We connected. I mean, the Charleston culinary scene is pretty small, so everybody knows everybody. But I think she is so good at seeking other women out in the food world and very directly saying, hey, you need to do this. You need to work harder. You need to do this idea. And, you know, at first you're like, oh, but you listen when she gives you advice. And we are in a culinary organization called Les Dames d'Escoffier, which is a French women's culinary organization. And so that's really where we became friends and became, you know, she's the one that said, you must write a cookbook. And I said, I have no business writing a cookbook. I don't have any culinary training. And she said, it doesn't matter. You have recipes and you have stories. And so, you know, she really poked and prodded me and pushed me to do way more than I ever thought that I could. And I will be forever grateful to her. And she's just one of these women that believes in building other women up. And she's magical. She's magical.
That's incredible. I think too, you know, aside from Natalie, like if you look at Ina Garten, she's technically a home cook. Like she didn't have that culinary training either. And she's a legend now, and she has, I don't even know how many cookbooks now, but you're really right. When you have like those stories and you have the wherewithal to, you know, test out recipes and things that other people enjoy and the history behind it too, which is a vital piece. Like people like that personalization and they like to try new things that don't have to necessarily be like the most intricate French dessert on the planet, you know?
Right. I totally agree. And I think people are connected by the stories. And that was actually my favorite part. I'm not a recipe writer. So I would like hand my recipe tester these pieces of paper and say, well, this one had a little pinch of this and that, and bless her for having to go through all that. And thank goodness I had her to kind of get me organized. But the stories it's really what all food memories are about, is what happened and why you served this and how it made them feel. And it's an annual tradition, and you know, that's what people want to read.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So now we're at 2005, you created Callie's Hot Little Biscuit. It was originally called Callie's Charleston Biscuits. What was the cause of the name change?
So we started as Callie's Charleston Biscuit because it was just mail order. And, you know, remember, my goal was to not open a restaurant. I said, no, I don't want that lifestyle. And so in 2005, it was really hard to sell biscuits because we were only selling them online. And I got kind of antsy, and this is when I realized, okay, I'm in the right field. I'm clearly an entrepreneur because I just kept thinking, how can I sell these biscuits? I got to sell more. I got to sell more. And I went to a lot of our gourmet grocery stores in town, and that's how I started the wholesale program, but continued to try to, how do I sell more? You know, and that was always the question. And I went to hear some marketing executives from Stonewall Kitchen speak at a food conference. And one of them said, you know, well, everybody knows our stores don't make any money. They're marketing. They're for marketing. And I thought, that's so interesting. And so I came home from my cookbook tour where people would say, well, when I come to Charleston, where can I get your biscuits hot? I didn't have a solution for that. And in an entrepreneurial brain, I'm thinking to myself, where can they get the hot little biscuits? And I just kept saying that over and over to myself, but didn't realize what I was getting ready to create. And then putting that together with, what if I were to have this tiny little brick and mortar that was only open from 8 to 2 so I could get my kids to school, pick them up if I was the only one. And it didn't need to necessarily make money. It just couldn't lose money. And it would give us visibility, because it's hard to remember before 2012 when Instagram came along. If you didn't have a brick and mortar, nobody knew about Callie's except for our devoted few followers and that were on our newsletter list. And so we opened our first Hot Little Biscuit bake shop, and it was supposed to be kind of like an outpost of Callie's. And it was not at all like what we thought. I mean, it was crazy busy, lines out the door. I mean, we couldn't handle it. I mean, we set this up to be this cute little tiny shop, and we would have people wait in line for 2 hours, and then we'd be sold out and they'd get angry. I mean, wow. It was like, oh my gosh, what do we do? You know? So it was a great problem to have, but you know, we realized that there are great things that came out of that. We got a lot of visibility for the website and for our wholesale program, but we also were able to tap into this totally different demographic than who was shopping online, because it was a lot of younger people. We're in the middle of a college town. It was foodies that, you know, didn't really know about buying food online yet. And this is in the beginning in 2014. So it really broadened our horizons. They were able to get biscuits for a lot less than they would when they have to have them shipped to their door. So everything changed when we opened that Hot Little Biscuit bake shop. It's also opening up a whole nother business, which made it really stressful to then run a e-commerce, wholesale, and then a restaurant. And so what did I do? I opened up 3 more, which was insanely dumb of me, but also did great things for the brand. We've now downsized since COVID, but you know, we went through this thing where people were like, do they call it Callie's Biscuits? Do they call it Hot Little Biscuit? And we spent a year polling and surveying our customers to see which they resonated with more. And we just felt like Callie's Hot Little Biscuit, because it's the brick and mortar, it's a happy, feel good place. And so the day after COVID hit, we relaunched our brand and switched everything to one brand, Callie's Hot Little Biscuit.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I feel like that one resonates because it's a little bit more specific. When you do Charleston, it's kind of a general thing and it kind of feels more exclusive to just people in Charleston. I mean, I like either. I like both of them. But I'm curious about the restaurants that you opened. Was that because, you know, you weren't necessarily wanting to do that initially? Was that something that you had to kind of hurdle over, I guess? Like, was that more of a challenge for you?
I definitely looked at it from the perspective of, this is not a restaurant. This is like a little cute coffee shop where you can come in and get some biscuits and learn about Callie's. I had, ignorance is bliss. I had no idea what was getting ready to happen. And we're so blessed and grateful for it. But I mean, I had no business opening a restaurant. I did hire somebody that had a culinary background, and she helped me do it and she helped me run it. And she also helped me open the 3 additional ones. But you know, I'm very comfortable in a kitchen, so it wasn't a long learning curve. And I think I got a little carried away. I probably should have stayed with just the 2 in Charleston. But you get so much incredible positive feedback, and people are like, please open one here, open one here. You got to come here. And you get caught up in it, and you want to say yes, because people want you there. And there were so many great things that came out of opening all the other ones. But at the end of the day, you know, I had to go back to, what was my mission? My mission was to be a super present mom and to have a food business. And so when thinking about how to simplify my life and also grow the business, because it's really hard to grow that many different verticals, we said, you know, if I'm not touching the restaurants every day, they're not as great as they are if I'm touching them. So we closed the ones out of town, and every day now that I'm in town and not traveling for work, they're on my route, and my team knows that I'm always there for them, and I will be there, and they run so much better because I'm there. So I feel really good about it. That's not to say that I wouldn't want to have more one day, but I want a partner to do that with, because it's just too much for one person.
Yeah. And that's really good that you're able to recognize that you need extra assistance for stuff, especially, you know, everyone has their strengths and weaknesses. people who own a restaurant, it's much more of a managing skill. People who are in the kitchen, you know, they have their own skills. They're very different jobs. And owning a restaurant itself, even if it's just like a small brick and mortar, is like just such a hard thing to do. You don't realize how much details and work you actually have to put into it. One thing I've noticed about myself is that when I'm excited about something or motivated about something, I tend to get ahead of myself too. And I'm like, I totally would have opened like 3 more shops too, or 4 more shops. Like if people are asking, I'm like, yeah, of course. Yes, 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 yes. And then you regret it a little bit. You're like, oh shoot, maybe I shouldn't have said yes right away until I maybe looked into it more. That's just a problem
that I have. I have it too, because I'm a pleaser and I want to grow the brand. And so I'm like, well, if I can do 2, why can't I do 2 more? I'll just hire more people. But it doesn't work that way. You really need somebody that has skin in the game at every location so that they have ownership and that they're managing it, because it's impossible for you to be in 5 places at once.
Mm-hmm. And I will try till the day I die, probably, to be at 5 places at once.
Me too. But... and saying yes is like, I want to say yes to everybody. But somebody said to me a couple years ago, you know, before you say yes, think about if it's an event a year from now, are you sure you'd want to do it in a year? Like, really think about it, because I'm the worst about saying no.
That's very smart. I probably should do the same. Like, look more towards the future than tomorrow.
Right.
With all of the success that it now has 19 years later, was there ever a time where you thought it might not work out?
Every day. Yesterday, early this morning, my second daughter woke up in the middle of the night with appendicitis, I said, oh, you're fine, get a heating pad. And thank goodness we took her to the doctor, because she had to have emergency surgery. But, you know, every day there is so much doubt. And as an entrepreneur, you know, whether it's imposter syndrome or is this going to be the day that the business ends? I don't know what it is. I know that I'm not the only one that feels that way. But 19 years in, and I'm still wondering, like, are we a real business? Is this going to work? You know, am I going to screw it up? I don't know that goes away. If it hadn't gone away after 19 years, I don't think it's going anywhere. And maybe that's a good thing. Maybe that keeps you on your toes. Maybe it keeps you working hard. Maybe it keeps you humble. I don't know. But I definitely still have it.
Oh, yeah. The imposter syndrome is a real, real thing. I was just talking about this recently, and it's the disassociation that you have from things that are happening in your life. Because, you know, you can't believe you got to a certain point, or you can't believe something happened. I just did a recent appearance on like Good Morning America, and that was my first national television appearance ever. It was really exciting. And I was like, but I feel so disassociated from it. I'm like, that didn't happen. That wasn't real. Like, especially when you do things over the computer too, it doesn't really, you know, help. But I think it just takes time to work through that. Honestly. Yeah.
And I think as you grow, you're going to continue to have that doubt. I don't think it goes away, or at least it hasn't for me. And so you have to learn how to manage that properly, because it can be heavy. It can get you down. Like, what am I doing? Maybe I should shut. I mean, I say to my husband at least once a month, maybe I should just close it. Maybe it's just not going to work anymore. And he just looks at me, he's like, what are you talking about? So, yeah, I go through that a lot.
Sometimes you just need that third party objective to be like, stop, you know, spiraling. It's working out. Like, everything is doing well. Like, you don't need to close or stop doing what you're doing, you know? I know you tend to mentor aspiring entrepreneurs. Would that be your advice for them, to kind of ignore, not necessarily ignore, but like heed the self-doubt, I guess?
Yeah, I think recognizing that it's gonna always be there and be prepared for it, and to switch the narrative and change the perspective. So, you know, I work on this daily when I have that feeling creep up, saying, nope, we're on the right path. You're doing this for a reason. There's a bigger plan that I don't even know about. Keep moving forward. You know, that's the one foot in front of the other. You have a bad day, go home, have a great dinner with your family, let it go, wake up the next day, and just keep moving forward. And that oftentimes, you know, time, not overthinking it, sleeping is so key to making your thoughts just calm. And a lot, usually you find the solutions for the problem. So as I'm in my older age, I've learned to not react and get so, you know, and I have to, and I'm talking to myself all day long, like, it's going to be fine. You're going to be fine. Everything's fine. That's how I deal with it. I'm just constantly telling myself, this is going to be fine. It's not the end of the world. We're going to get through it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's funny that you said that. Cause like I had a lack of sleep last night. I don't know why. I was cleaning and then all of a sudden it was like midnight and then I went to bed at 1. Like it was like too late for me to go back. And I woke up super, super irritated this morning. So then when like my sister texted me something so simple and I like automatically got really, really irritated about it. And I was like, okay, Olivia, take a breath. Like this isn't that big of a deal. You'll figure it out. It'll all work out. And I always try to go with that mentality that it will all work out because it normally does. And then if it doesn't, at least it could be some sort of learning experience. But yeah, no, it's funny that you said that. And side note, I hope your daughter's okay.
Thank you. She is. That was the craziest thing. We have not had any experience with that, but she's all good and at home resting and doesn't have an appendix anymore. So apparently that's not something you need.
No, it's not. My sister went through something similar. I think we were all in school. It was when I was pretty young, but my grandma had been watching her for some reason because my parents were they're probably at work. And she got this like that same sudden pain. And then she was like, I'm fine. And then all of a sudden she was not fine. And they were like, okay, let's take the appendicitis.
Yeah.
Let's take the appendix out.
Crazy, crazy, crazy.
So let's talk about your PBS show, How She Rolls.
Crazy.
That's what it's named.
Yeah.
Was it an easy transition for you to go from business owner to the essential star of a television doc?
I think it was easy because I don't consider myself the star. And so, I did it for two reasons. I did it because I wanted to obviously raise awareness for the business. And I did it secondly because I feel like my story could inspire other women. And I wanted to do that. And I get so many phone calls. Can you help me? I have questions. And my answer is always yes. And this is before the show. When you've been in business for 19 years in the food world, you know, I don't know. I've been a resource. And to me, that is a gift. I mean, I'm honored that somebody's asking me. So I always say yes, no matter who it is. And I actually have somebody tomorrow. They're starting a biscuit business in Virginia and they want to meet with me. Aww. And, you know, a lot of people would say, no, I don't want to, you know, I'm like, there's a plenty of business for everybody. So that is kind of my philanthropy because I don't have a lot of time to do any real philanthropic work other than donate my time and my product. So I love it. And it gets me excited. And it's twofold because I am reinvesting myself in my business. I'm remembering that time. And I always learn something too, you know, and it's also telling your story reminds you of why you're doing what you're doing. And so that to me is fuel. And there are so many days when you need that, you know, when you're burnt out. And so being able to share your story is, oh, right. Okay. Maybe I am on the right track. I have been doing this for a while and people are actually buying the biscuits. So
they are. And you know, I mentioned imposter syndrome earlier, but when you are mentoring these other, especially women who are looking up to you and trying to see or gauge at least advice to you, do you think you are still experiencing imposter syndrome or are you more like excited to be in that mentor role?
I'm very excited to be in the mentor role. I try not to make it about me. I don't want to tout myself. I just want to help them. I started at such a time when there weren't a lot of female entrepreneurs and not many in the food world. And so there wasn't anybody for me to talk to. And it's very lonely. All entrepreneurial businesses are lonely, but especially being a female in the food world yes. and CPG was very lonely. And I had no idea what I was doing. I had no background and just learning by mistake. So I do love it. I love being a mentor. And, you know, every person I talk to, I say, here's my cell phone, text me anytime, like whatever you need. And if I don't know the answer, I'll get it for you.
That's incredible that you're willing to do that. And I know that the women that you are speaking to, I'm sure appreciate it so much, because just having someone guide you like that, especially like not coming from a food background at all, whether if they're not coming from a food background and, you know, you didn't as much as well, like it just is nice to have that relatability and someone to kind of chat through things with. Because when you are an entrepreneur, it's like you're going through all these things in your head and your own creativity. And it can be a little bit overwhelming to not have someone else to kind of talk to you about
it. Totally. Couldn't agree more.
For your PBS show, is the second season coming out soon? Is it already out? I was kind of looking.
It's out. We have 24 episodes, okay. Season one and season two, 20 episodes. So they're both out. Yeah. And I'm not going to tell you about the second season, but you'll see that we are only doing two seasons at this time. We had some family health problems, and it just seemed like the right time for me to take a break. It's really hard to film a television show and work on your business. And I'm learning now that, you know, there are a lot of things that were missed, which makes total sense. But, you know, at the time I didn't realize that. And so it's such an incredible opportunity. I also felt like it was time for somebody else to tell their story. And I mean, it didn't need to go on and on and on forever and ever. You get the idea. I felt incredibly blessed to have the opportunity, and it was such a positive experience. And we got really lucky with a great production company, and doing it during COVID was insane. And I just love that the whole thing was documented during that time, because it was such a crazy time. And we won a Peabody for season one, which is really cool.
Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah. Congratulations. That's very cool.
Thank you. I didn't know what a Peabody was, but apparently it's good in the TV world.
It is. It's very good. I think something that's so commendable too, especially, and this is more for like actors and movies and television shows, but they know when, you know, the arc of their character has to end, and that's why they like leave a show or they end something. So it's a good trait to know when, you know, something good has to come to an end, because when you tend to drag things on, then it might not be as good as you wanted to, or might not, you know, do what you wanted.
I wanted it to be very authentic. I didn't want to have to make up an episode. And so when we would sit down to write the episodes, it was basically looking at the calendar, and this is what's truly going on. I don't want to fabricate anything. And so, you know, when we sat down to talk about season three, and my youngest daughter was really sick, and I just said, you know, I'm just not in the right headspace to do this, and I really need to start focusing on my business again. And it seemed like the right time.
So I'm going to switch gears to talk more generally just about like food. And when you think of American Southern food, you think of like pan fried chicken, mashed potatoes, cornbread, biscuits, sweet tea, like those kinds of things. Aside from the obvious deliciousness of this food, what do you think makes the cuisine so unique?
Oh, wow. That's a great question. You know, I think when I think of Southern food and what makes it unique, I think that the first thing that comes to mind is that Southern food is food that's been passed down from generation to generation. And while there may be some variations in this recipe to that, and this family does it this way, it's all about celebrating, commiserating family around the table, and tried and true recipes that are served again and again in a very traditional fashion. And so, you know, when I think about my oldest daughter is in college and she's coming home on Wednesday, and I just know what she wants to okay. eat, you know? And so for her, the comfort mm-hmm. meal is a roast chicken, rice and gravy, biscuits, and roasted green beans. And I just know that that gives her like that comfort, and she feels like, oh, I'm now home, you know? And so everybody has that version within their own culture. When I talk to people about food and, you know, it's the memories that make you feel comfortable and as if, you know, you're in a good place. And so I think Southern food has just been around for so long, and it's us Southerners have done a really good job of making a big to-do about meals, and everything is surrounded around food and drinking, eating and drinking. We're really good at eating and drinking. And
of course.
That's how we communicate. That's how we communicate. Everything is an occasion.
Oh yeah, for sure. And I think too, food is definitely a comfort for any cuisine, but for some reason I feel like Southern food is just brings that warmness. Mm-hmm. It could be because of like the heartiness of the food itself. It's like biscuits are warm, like, you know, cornbread's warm, like things like that. But it just feels like you put a lot of love and effort into it, and that's what kind of makes it so wholesome and like makes you feel a little bit better.
Everything's made by hand. That's how our biscuits are made. And mm-hmm. so when you make something, that is the way that you're communicating with somebody. I've taken my time and spent all day and written a recipe and set the table and brought out the fine china and thought about what it is that makes you feel good. And it's definitely the communication, the way the Southerners communicate. And you know, you're right. The food is, it's hearty, it's sustenance. And if you think back to biscuits, you know, back in Civil War times, I mean, the soldiers would tuck biscuits in their jackets, and that would keep them full for hours, because, you know, biscuits stay with you. And so it is literal comfort and sustenance. And, you know, I think one of the coolest things about biscuits is it can be served at the White House at the finest of cocktail parties, and it's the most delicious biscuit you've ever had. Mm. But at the same time, some of my most favorite biscuits can be on a roadside gas station for 49 cents. And so the fact that biscuits really hold no economic barriers and that they speak to everyone is incredibly important for me to recognize and to promote and talk about, because while biscuits are Southern, they really are not just the bread of the South. They're the bread of our country. They've been around forever, and they've fed. Everybody has a story about biscuits and a memory, and usually a recipe that maybe got lost along the way, or maybe it's been passed down.
Mm-hmm. I like that a lot, that you said economic doesn't have any economic barriers. That's really, really interesting to me, because, you know, obviously eating is universal. Everyone has to do it. But when it comes to a certain type of food that actually could be elevated and also served at like your family's mm-hmm. barbecue is a really, really cool thing to highlight. I think that's
we've served biscuits with Spam and then turned around and served them with caviar. So, you know, it's for everyone.
Oh, that's funny. I can't say I'm a big caviar person.
You should try it on a biscuit with some herb.
I know.
There's nothing better.
Oh, yeah, maybe I should. I think to me, caviar is just very, very salty to me. And then while I was eating it, the person I was eating it with very much pointed out that it's, you know, fish eggs. And then that kind of got in my head, and I couldn't really go forward after that. So I think I just need to go into it not thinking.
Don't think about it. And if you can get your hands on a biscuit and serve it with ample butter and your biscuit cut in half and toasted, and the butteriness of the biscuit and the way that the fish eggs pop in your mouth, and that, oh, there's just not much better. It's so good.
When you brought up the college thing too, that actually brought me back too, because when I would come home from college, my dad would do something similar, and I'm Italian, so of course it's going to be like spaghetti and meatballs.
Like a Sunday gravy.
Mm-hmm. No, exactly. Sunday gravy. Like, I'd ask him for lasagna. He would text me right before. I'd be like, okay, what do you want to eat? And I'll be like, make your fried eggplant. I want pasta and I want, you know, every other Italian food that you've ever made.
And that just makes you feel like you're home, and that there's no better feeling than that, you know?
Mm-hmm. I totally agree. So when there's, I have someone on the podcast that is like a specialty in one certain food, I always ask if there were people who wanted to make it homemade and make it at home, what's the biggest mistake you see when people are baking biscuits?
The biggest mistake for making biscuits at home is to not, you need to make them by hand. And so putting the dough in the mixer and then walking away and getting a cup of coffee is like disastrous. So it's such a quick bread, and you don't want to overwork the dough, or you end up really getting like super yingy yangy pizza dough, which gives you a tough biscuit. So you barely want to bring it together just enough until you get all of the components together, and then stop messing with it. There's no kneading. The less you mess, the better. And you want the dough to feel kind of like down pillow, like it is just barely come together, and that will produce the most delicious down pillow, like melt in your mouth biscuit with a little crispy on the top and a little crispy on the bottom. But when you bite into it, it should disintegrate in your mouth. It should just be this delicious, slightly acidic from the buttermilk and the cream cheese, and then the salted butter just brings it all together. It's delicious. I could have one right now.
I know, that sounds so good. I'm like, it's almost lunchtime where I'm at, so I'm maybe I have some time. Do you have any, I've seen like people add certain ingredients to biscuits, but do you just advise them being, you know, original plain biscuits, or is there anything you like to add?
I love to start with the buttermilk. The buttermilk, our buttermilk recipe is the flour that we use, salted butter, cream cheese, and whole buttermilk. And when you get that flavor, once you get that base, then you can start being creative. You can add blueberries and sugar and vanilla and cinnamon and cheddar cheese and sausage, herbs, any kind of fruit. And that is kind of fun. And then it's really up to you to decide, you know, what your favorite flavor is. I mean, I have made just about every biscuit under the sun, and the creamsicle biscuit is probably my wildest flavor, and actually beyond delicious.
Creamsicle? What is
it's
in that?
It's got orange juice, freshly squeezed juice, and lots of zest. And it is double butter, no cream cheese, whole milk, vanilla, and then a great cream cheese, orange zested icing on top. It's really good. Yeah.
Whoa, that sounds so, so good. I was a little skeptical when you said creamsicle, but when you described it, that was very, sounds very, very good.
It just reminds me of like the push-ups of my childhood.
That's the first thing I thought of. Let's talk about what's next for you. Do you have any upcoming projects you'd like to share, or anything else going on?
Yeah, well, we're super excited about having all three of our flavors of biscuits in Whole Foods nationwide, which is amazing.
Oh, no way.
I was out in on the West Coast last week promoting that, and we'll be out doing demos over the next couple of months. And in June, we've created a new product called the Biscuit Cracker, which is, it came about authentically with the leftover dough that we couldn't, that was too tough to make into biscuits. We started rolling it really thin and docking it and making crackers out of them and putting them on our catering platters at the eateries, and they just took off. And so we have just launched a new line, online only, but we'll be in Whole Foods in June, of biscuit crackers. So we have sea salt, sharp cheddar, and everything, and they are so addictive. It's dangerous. Really good.
Oh, the sharp cheddar. I know I can eat a whole box.
They're
delicious.
And actually the everything is, oh my gosh, it's so good. Really good. They're all great.
Well,
and, you taste it and it's this crunchy, delicious cracker, but it tastes like a biscuit, which is kind of fun.
Oh, that is fun. I'll have to try those. That's so exciting. I have a short game for you if you're up for it. I do it with every single guest.
I'm in.
All right, cool. So it's like a little lightning round. I'm going to say random foods and food trends, and then you're going to tell me if you're for or against them.
I'm ready.
Cool. All right. First one, plant-based burgers.
I'm not here for it.
Totally fair. It either has to be the best burger of my life or I'm not doing it plant-based.
Agreed.
Second, boxed cornbread mix.
I love boxed cornbread mix. I'm a Jiffy girl. You do? Oh, yeah. That's like so nostalgic. And I grew up making cornbread that way. But, you know, one of my most favorite things to make with it currently is corn dogs. Really good for corn dogs.
Oh, mm-hmm. That's so southern.
So good. Who doesn't love a corn dog? Oh my gosh. So good.
That's actually, yeah, that's so smart. I never really thought of it beyond cornbread. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I normally make cornbread once a year for Thanksgiving, and I need to make it more because it's literally so good. And my family makes me double the trays so that we have extras left over. That's how good it is.
Well, we have, one of my recipes in my first cookbook is like skillet cornbread cakes, which are to die for. So instead of putting it in muffin tins or making it in a cast iron, you fry them like pancakes, put a little green onion in there and maybe roast some shrimp and put a little like sriracha mayo. Like, oh, so good. So good.
Oh, okay. That kind of leads into my next one slightly because you mentioned one ingredient.
Okay.
Shrimp and grits.
Yeah. I have to say yes to that.
I'm trying to get you canceled if you say no to shrimp and grits.
Yeah, we can't say no.
Third one, chicken fried steak.
Oh, one of my favorites. One of my favorites. My best friend, who is my director of operations, her mother's country fried steak is in my first cookbook, and it is the ultimate comfort food.
Okay. I haven't had it in a really long time. Normally, I'm not a huge fan of fried things. I don't know why. The flavor never resonated with me. I just didn't like it as much, except for fried Oreos. That is like, I do like those. They're really gross, but.
I've never had a fried Oreo, but I mean, to be Southern is to love fried food. So I've never met a fried food I didn't like, and I could eat fried food every day and probably shouldn't, but I love it. I'm obsessed.
Nah, shouldn't is relative. You can eat fried food. All right. Fifth one, pineapple casserole.
No, ma'am. I don't even know what that is, but no. Pineapple is for piña coladas. That's all. And I do love what is the great, the pork carnitas, but no, it's called something else. I'm totally blanking with pineapple.
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
I have it on the tip of my tongue, but I cannot remember what it is. And that is a recipe in my cookbook too, taking the pineapple and like making the spit. Oh, I'm sleep deprived today, but you get what I'm saying.
So am I. I'm always sleep deprived.
I'm going to think about it in like 30 minutes and text you.
All right. And then let me know. And then I'll just insert it right here.
Okay.
It's funny because I was looking up Southern food trends that were kind of recent. And then I came across this article that was, I don't really like this word, but quote, weird or maybe out of the ordinary from the regular like Southern food trends. And pineapple casserole came up and I was like, this doesn't sound like something I'd be interested in. So I wanted to get here.
Did you read it? I bet it probably has like coconut in it. That sounds like something my grandmother would have made back in the day. And I would have said, no, thank you to that. Uh-uh. Tacos al pastor. I just remembered it. Al pastor.
I know what you're talking about. I did read it, but now my also sleep deprived brain is forgetting everything that was on it. So I'll get back to you on that.
Okay.
All right. Here's my final question for you that I also ask every guest. If there is one baking appliance or utensil that you think everyone should splurge on, what would it be and why?
Oh my gosh. I really probably would say the one thing that I couldn't live without and I think everyone should have is a zester. Because to me, citrus is probably for people that don't cook all the time, the most underrated ingredient in your kitchen. It can change mm-hmm. everything from the zest to the juice to, you know, there's just everything should have some kind of citrus in it. So I love my zester, but then you can also use it to mince garlic and ginger and grate Parmesan and breadcrumbs. I mean, so I love a zester. I travel with mine. A zester and a peeler and a knife and I'm good to go.
That's so funny. You're just like in a hotel room with a zester. And
Pretty much.
No, you're so right though. Citrus brightens up like every single dish I make, even just like a little lemon or, you know, orange is underrated too. I think oranges is so underrated.
Any citrus I'm a huge fan of, and I almost like the zest more than the juice. Like I'm obsessed, and it makes great rims for cocktails too. I feel like that sometimes gets missed. Put the zest in your cocktail rim.
Oh, that is so true. Cause you always think just like sugar or salt. Yeah. I go to margaritas automatically. Yeah. That's just what I got.
And I love sugar, salt, zest, cumin, chili powder, and a little cayenne. And that's really a fun, fun rim.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that sounds really good. Okay, what drink are you putting in it though?
Oh, well, you mentioned margarita, which is in my top two favorites. So that, but I also love a classic daiquiri with a fun rim. I mean, you know, the possibilities are really endless. Salty dogs are one of my favorite drinks ever, and that's a great rim to have with the grapefruit zest. So I could go on for days about rims. I think all drinks should have rims.
We'll just have a separate episode to talk about alcohol rims. I actually recently, this actually wasn't recent. I don't know why I said that. This was like 2 or 3 years ago. And I had a strawberry daiquiri mixed with a pina colada. Mm. And I forgot what they called it, but it was so mind-blowingly delicious. Like I think about it often. I was also beside a pool and the weather was nice. So that could have attributed to how much I loved it as well. But if you haven't tried that, you should try it.
I'm going on vacation on Thursday, and I'm going to make a point to do that. It probably is good because it's not super sweet. It cuts the super sweet of the daiquiri, and you get that savory from the pina colada, too. Sounds good. I'll try it and let you know. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Are you going on a tropical vacation?
I am. On Thursday, we're going to the Virgin Islands for spring break. Mm-hmm.
Fun. I was just in Cabo, which was like crazy nice. It was for a work trip. I didn't pay for it. Just to make that clear.
That's even better. To be able to go there for work is amazing.
Yeah. I was living life with, cocktail next to me in the pool and everything. So I'm excited for you to go to the Virgin Islands. I've never been there, but it sounds very nice.
Yes, I am looking forward to it. Counting down the hours.
I'm sure. All right. Well, those are all my questions for you. So thank you so, so much for taking the time out, coming on. Enjoy your vacation. I'm glad your daughter's doing well. And thank you. It was so great to meet you.
So nice to chat with you. I really appreciate you having me on and spreading the good buttery word of Callie's Biscuits.
Oh, yeah. That leads right into my outro, which is you can keep up with Carrie's latest project on Instagram at Carrie Bailey Maury, or check out www.calliesbiscuits.com.
Yes.
Hey, fellow foodies. Thanks so much for listening. And don't forget to leave me a review. While you're at it, make sure to follow me at livinforfoodpod on Instagram or TikTok, or email me at livinforfoodpod@gmail.com. Let me know what you're cooking up this week, which guests you would like to see on the podcast, or tell me your opinions on the latest viral food trend. And in case you're just joining me, there is an entirety of season 1 ready and waiting for you. Until next time.